to make some sense of what Jesus is doing in this gospel, where he accuses his own followers of being an evil generation. And he speaks about the Jonah case and the Queen of the South. We can use something that comes from C.S. Lewis. Maybe you know C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia. It's a fantasy series, but it has a lot of Christian elements to it. And one of the characters, one of the main characters, is this lion called Aslan. It's kind of a Christ figure. And it's interesting that he chose a lion as the image of Christ, because a lion is a powerful but also frightening creature. And he tries to convey that this lion is both good and also unpredictable and powerful. One of the recurring lines in the series is that Aslan is not a tame lion. Even the unbelievers use it against the believers to say, because they say, well, if there's this Aslan who's going to save everybody, where is he? Why don't you just show him to us? And of course, you can't just show God to people. You can't just make Christ show up on your terms. And so they say, well, he's not a tame lion. And there's so they tease the believers with that line. Anyway, the idea of Christ being somehow not tame, being somehow unpredictable, is important, because the demand that God provide a sign for us is actually a demand that he be tamed by us, that he be under our control. So here's this crowd of people, you know, attracted to Jesus, but they want him to perform for them. And Jesus won't play the game. He's not under their control. He's not a tame lion. Maybe you're familiar with the term that Bishop Barron uses sometimes to describe how modern culture has spoken about Jesus. He says the problem is that modern culture has domesticated Jesus, domesticated him, which when you domesticate something, you tame it, you know, like a dog or a cat or any beast, and you make it safe and secure, and even kind of a comfortable companion. That's domestic animals are no danger to us. But the implication of that expression of Bishop Barron is that Christ is wild. He's a wild animal. And it's quite a daring thing to say, but I think there's really a profound truth to it, because he's not someone you can just put on a shelf and take comfort in. He's more powerful than that. He's more than than the box we might want to put him in, or the cage we want to put him in. So it's easy to respect a lion in a cage, say, oh yes, isn't that something, and king of beasts, if you go to a zoo and you see a lion. It's a lot different if you meet a lion in the wild and you say, wait a minute, I'm not so sure how to relate to this wild animal. Now, the reason I mention that is because here, Jesus is the King of Kings. He comes as the Lord of Lords. He's the Lion of Judah. He comes into the world, and he is attracting people. Still more people gathered in the crowd. He has to make himself known at the same time that he doesn't allow himself to be domesticated. So unlike most religious leaders, he says very challenging things a lot of times. Here's a big crowd of people who really want to see him. And the first thing he says is, this generation is an evil generation. That doesn't exactly win people, make friends and win people. What's that expression? Yeah. Win friends and influence people. You don't go around telling people that they're evil. But Jesus says it here. And why are they evil? They seek a sign, meaning they want me to do what they want. They're not here to receive what I have actually come to give. Then Jesus does something that's even bolder than making an accusation that it's an evil generation. He compares himself to Jonah and to Solomon. Now, this is something that no rabbi would do. Unless to say, I have received this from Solomon and I'm handing it on to you, the wisdom of Solomon, the wise man of the Bible, or the effective prophet of the Bible, Jonah. I'm doing what Jonah did. Maybe someone would be bold enough to say that. But Jesus says, you have something greater than Jonah here. You have something greater than Solomon here. It's quite a claim. You don't just walk into a room and say, I'm greater than Solomon. Because Solomon was the great, he was the wisest man in history, in the Jewish history. And I'm greater than he is. That's what he's saying. So you see why he's not a tame lion. He's bursting out of any boxes we can put him in. If we keep trying to tame him, we don't respond to him. We don't submit to him. We force him to submit to us, or we only take from him what we want. And that's the danger here. That's why it says here, the queen of the south who submitted herself, who went to great efforts to find Solomon and listen to his wisdom, she did what you're supposed to do for wisdom. You submit yourself to wisdom. You seek it and you accept it. That's what she did, but the people of this generation, they won't. So she's going to condemn them. Then the men of Nineveh, well, they were they were an evil generation, but they repented. They repented at one day of the preaching of Jonah. So it doesn't matter how wicked they were, they repented. Here, the crowd has something greater than Jonah, someone greater than Jonah, and they're not repenting. So that's the challenge. It's a wild thing to do, to say, I'm greater than Jonah and you're worse than the people of Nineveh, because that was an evil city. But that's what he's saying. Now, this is something related to what Paul does here in this part of his letter to the Galatians. He makes this comparison between freedom and slavery, which, if you're looking at it from a distance, say, well, come on, I mean, slavery is really terrible and freedom is really great. And nobody chooses slavery. That doesn't make any sense. Well, in fact, it is what we choose when we domesticate Christ, when we put him in a box. What we're actually doing is, yeah, we're limiting him, but we're actually limiting ourselves. We're placing ourselves under a self-imposed restriction. Now, in the case of the Galatians, the restriction they were putting themselves under was the old law. So Jesus, St. Paul is not talking here about slavery to sin, which is much, much worse. Slavery to sin is the worst cage. And you would say, why would anyone choose slavery? Because it's not wild. It's secure. It's clear. It's under your own control. And this is how we choose to live in a way that we can control even if we're miserable. Why? Well, because it takes a lot more responsibility to be free. It takes maturity. It takes risk. It takes sacrifice to be free and to let others be in charge, meaning God and those whom he puts in authority over us. Well, that's real freedom requires a real going beyond ourselves, and that's frightening to us. So we choose slavery to our passions, or in this case, slavery to some religious system. So that what they were doing was they were placing themselves under the law. The Galatians were going back to the Jewish practice and saying, this is what's required for us to be justified or to be saved. And Paul, in this whole letter to the Galatians, keeps hammering away at them. Don't be so stupid. You know, don't go backward. Have you not received the Spirit that you did receive? I mean, what's gone wrong with you? That's St. Paul. Here he's saying, let's make a comparison between the children of a slave woman and the children of a free woman, the children of Mount Sinai and the children of the New Jerusalem. When Christ came, he came to set us free. He didn't come to put us in a cage. So, and this is what it says at the end of the reading. For freedom, Christ set us free. So stand firm and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. Stand firm, meaning being free takes a stronger commitment. It's harder to be free. This is not the freedom that the world thinks of. Freedom meaning I can just do whatever I want. That's not the freedom that Christ gives us. Anyone can do whatever he wants anytime. That's not freedom. That's just wildness in the undisciplined sense. But to be genuinely free is to choose, to have the capacity to choose what's right, to choose what's good, and to do it. And the more we do it, the freer we become. The less we do it, the more enslaved we become. So it's the immature, the selfish, the narrow, are the ones who become enslaved, even though they think they're doing whatever they want. Well, doing whatever you want means becoming a slave of whatever happens to pop into your head or into your flesh. That's real slavery. So going back to this image of Christ as the wild lion, he invites us to follow him. He's not saying, come into a cage with me. He's saying, come, climb the mountain of holiness with me. Climb the mount of Calvary with me. Do something bold. Do something wild. Take steps beyond what is comfortable to you. Love beyond what comes naturally to you. It's a very challenging freedom. But the best, the most fulfilling, the happiest. The people who love the most are the happiest ones. The people who give of themselves the most. The people who won't let themselves be enslaved by sin or enslaved by their own rigidity or fear or whatever it is that we enslave ourselves with. People who will not let themselves be boxed in by demands of culture or demands of family or whatever. People who are genuinely followers of this wild lion are the freest and happiest people of all. That's the appeal of Christian faith. So to be told this is an evil generation, even though that's like a slap in the face, it's a good start to say, okay, well, here I'm in an evil generation. Am I going to be enslaved in the same box that everyone in this evil generation's in? No. Well, I can't break out of it myself. Christ is the one who sets me free. And this is the great line at the end of the reading. It comes up again tomorrow, by the way. For freedom, Christ set us free. So stand firm, be free, make the decision to live freedom, and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. That's the good news to us. But we have to choose it and live according to the freedom Christ has won for us.